All right, everybody, we're going to get started. We're off to a slow start here. The text message didn't go out, so it looks like it's going out right now. If you're on the line, calls are flooding in, so the text message must have just went out. This is a opportunity if you want to get in with a question, a comment, a topic. Now is your chance. It's going to start picking up here pretty quick. So if you've got anything at all you want to talk about or ask, press 1 on your phone. If you do that right now, I guarantee we'll get to you. Now that the text message has gone out, the call should start flooding in here. So we will get started, and I think we'll be fine. Here we go.
Your money, your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry.
This is Trucking Business
and Beyond,
the show that puts the money where it belongs,
back in your pocket.
Welcome to my world. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. The show is all about the business of trucking. We take your calls and answer your questions about trucks, money, fuel mileage, maintenance, tires, taxes, technology, health and fitness on the road, getting started as an owner-operator, finding freight, working with brokers. The list goes on and on. All you have to do is pick up the phone and give me a call. We'll talk about it here on the air. I'm going to get to those calls in just a little bit. A couple things going on money-wise. Nothing I'm all that excited about, but this may apply to a couple of you. First off, just looking at the Republican presidential candidates, there are 4 of them that are claiming that if they are elected, they will work to eliminate the IRS. Those are Ben Carson, Ted Cruz, Rand Paul, and Mike Huckabee. Of those, they're not real clear. Well, I guess maybe they are. It looks like Cruz, Carson, and Paul are all looking at a flat tax combined with a sales tax. Certainly better than what we have now, but still not the best option. I believe that the best option is the fair tax, which is what Huckabee is campaigning for. I'm not a huge fan of Huckabee for a lot of other reasons, but as far as his tax stance goes, I love the fact that he is a huge supporter of the fair tax. The problem I have with the flat tax, even though it would be way better than what we have, is nearly as good as the fair tax. And once we make, if we were to make a major change in the tax system, and either one of these would be a major change. Once we make that major change, it will be decades before we do it again. So I want to make sure that we get the best possible option. And for me, that would be the fair tax. Now, I'm not sure. I haven't really thought much about the presidential election yet or even the primaries. I guess that might be a big enough issue that it could tilt the scales in favor of voting for Huckabee just for that reason alone. But we'll have to see. There is something else that I want to let you know about. I'm not a huge fan of it, but it might be something that would be good for some of you. And what it is a new type of retirement account. Not that we really need another one. We have so many right now, but it might be good for some people. It is a government-run program, and it makes putting money into a retirement account really simple and really cheap. I like that, but it's also got a lot of limitations on it, and I'm not so wild about that. You can find it at myra.gov, myra.gov. So it's really simple. You don't have to pay any fees. You don't have to go to an investment company and pay sales loads and fees, and you don't have to have any minimums. And it's really easy to put money in directly from your check. Employer has direct deposit, which almost everybody does now. So you could set a certain amount and say, hey, you know, I want to put $20 a week. And that's pretty tough to do anywhere else, but you can do it in this account. So that's the upside to this. It's really simple, it's cheap, and there are no minimums. Those are the upsides. So if you have just been having trouble saving enough money or understanding where you should go to open this, or you don't want to pay the fees, this could be for you. Now, the downsides are that you can only invest in a government securities fund. That's your only choice of investment. And in 2014, that fund earned 2.3%. Over the last 10-year period, it's only earned 3%, 3.19. That is really, really low as far as earnings go. Now, it's certainly better than any savings account right now in a bank, but it's nowhere near what you're able to get in other investments. Another upside, I guess I forgot one, is you can never lose the initial money you put in. Whereas if you invest in a mutual fund, you could put $1,000 in and next year it could be worth $500 if the market really tanks. In this account, you put $1,000 in, you would never have less than $1,000. You may get your 2 or 3%, but you're not going to lose any money. That's another upside. So this is a good account for somebody who is just looking to get started. And you don't have a lot of money. You don't want to make this too complicated. You're not really worried right now about a lot of earnings. Take any risk. The other thing about this account, there are more upsides, I guess. The more I talk about it, the more I think there are some upsides here. You can also take your initial investments back out, just none of the earnings, before you're 59 and a half. That could be looked at as a positive and a negative. It's a positive because if you absolutely have to have the money, it's there and you're not going to get penalized. It's a negative in that it makes it easier to take your money back out, and I'm not so sure that's a good thing. So that one's kind of a mixed blessing. But this is something to look at. One other limitation. You can only have $15,000 total in this account. So it's kind of like a starter account. Once you were to get to $15,000, you would have to move it over. But at that point, you wouldn't have to worry about minimums. You could move over to a more traditional retirement account, traditional or Roth, and then you could look at investing into mutual funds or things like that that could potentially earn more. So it is a good starter account. If you're looking for a nice, easy, cheap way to get started saving some money for retirement, look at myra.gov. Let's get to some phone calls. Let's start off in Salt Lake City today. Kelly, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. How are you today?
Good. What's on your mind?
Well, that account kind of sounded like the one I heard in Tony Robbins' book, where you can't lose money, but you give up some of your earnings, but his return rate sounded better.
Well, it is. He was looking at, if I remember right, that was a form of an annuity. And annuities can get a little tricky. I don't even attempt to explain annuities on the air because they can be horrible investments. Some annuities are just one of the worst investments I've seen because the insurance companies that issue annuities they're very, very good at hiding all kinds of fees and really screwing with the numbers. So I've always kind of warned people against annuities, though he did a very good job of explaining the different kinds of annuities and pointing you in the right direction. And that's what that was. That was a type of annuity. And that is a better deal than this. This is really like a retirement account with training wheels. This is like the absolute beginner, somebody who doesn't know anything about retirement accounts, doesn't know, you know, how to get one started, doesn't have a whole lot of money. This is a good kind of, like I say, retirement account on training wheels for the first couple of years to get you started.
Yeah, our maintenance account, we've got more than 15,000 in that, and that pays 4%. So I'll stick
you
with
know,
that
right now, absolutely, right now, to have an account like that, you know, set up by your carrier that is paying 4% on $15,000, I would leave that money in there until something changed, because you can't even get 1% at a bank right now. So 4% on emergency money, which is what that could be used for, is outstanding. So that's a real benefit to have through your carrier. I talked this right into the break, so Kelly, hold on. We'll come back right after this and get to whatever your question is. Don't go away. I'm Kevin Rothenberg. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. We are going to get right back to the phone calls. I was talking with Kelly in Salt Lake City. Kelly, go ahead.
Okay, so my question today, on our fuel mileage makeover call, we talked about some fuel issues, and I had been treating for algae. Nothing happened. We wound up taking the fuel tanks off, cutting the ends off, and we had something that was, it was black and coating the inside of the tank. I call it slimy. It was slippery, kind of oily. And we got that all scrubbed out, used a half a gallon of Simple Green, and changed out all the fuel filters, started with all fresh fuel. And the fuel's turning dark again. With flashlight, I cannot see the bottom of the filler neck, much less the bottom of the tank.
Wow. Okay, so what you're describing sounds like a classic case of algae. And the clues here, there are three substances that cause our fuel to go black. Algae, asphaltene, and soot. The most difficult to deal with is algae. Asphaltene is pretty simple. There's a product Cummins makes called asphaltene. It usually clears things up and then you're done. Soot is fairly rare. And also soot, even though it turns the fuel black, doesn't seem to cause a lot of problems. It seems to be too fine to really clog the filter unless you get a lot of it. That doesn't happen all that often. Algae is the biggest problem because it will clog filters faster, and because it's a living organism, if you don't wipe it out completely, it can regrow and come back. So that's what it sounds like is going on here. Like, you've got a pretty nasty case of it. And one of the things I didn't hear you say, that after you did all this cleaning out, did you put any kind of an algicide in the fuel? Okay, so you are using an algicide, and it's still not going away.
Yeah, I put the shock dose in immediately after we filled up the first tank. And the first tank that went in, all completely fresh fuel, you know, by the time we had 1,000 miles
right
on and ready for the second tank, it was already really cloudy. Couldn't see through it at all.
Okay, now, has it clogged a filter? Are you noticing any performance issues yet?
No, the filters were not clogging. I put Killam. It's another algicide.
Okay.
We treated for that since the CMC, between the Startron and the Killam, and filters were going 25,000 miles.
Huh. Okay. Well, I don't know. This one sounds a little confusing. Usually if the case of algae is that bad, you will clog filters. Soot is the one that will turn the fuel really black but not cause a lot of problems. I wonder if you had a little bit of both going on. That could really confuse things. Because when you say it's slippery, slimy, oily, that's algae. Soot never feels like that. And asphaltene tends to feel sticky. What engine is this?
It's a 12.7 Detroit 03.
Yeah, so asphaltene in a 12.7 is really, really unusual. I almost never see it. The ISX and the newer emission engines tend to cause more asphaltene because it occurs when the fuel gets overheated. So it's a combination of a lower quality fuel and high heat. The ISX is the most common engine, and I think that's why Cummins actually creates the product, because they know their engine has a problem with it. So I would almost rule out asphaltene completely. I'm almost wondering, though, if you've got both soot and algae. Here's what I would do for now. If you're not really having a problem clogging filters, which is the real downside to algae, I've seen some cases of algae where you put brand new filters in and you don't even make it 1,000 miles and the thing's sputtering and losing power again because the filters are clogging. That doesn't sound like that's happening for you. So all I would do right now, I would make sure I carry filters and a wrench so I can change them myself on the side of the road if something goes wrong. And I would continue to carry the Startron and continue to put it in the maintenance dose and just keep an eye on this.
Would it be worth dropping $160 and having Polaris test the fuel?
Maybe. That's what I'm kind of debating on right now. Other than watching it, which doesn't cost you much of anything, every other step we would take is going to involve spending more money. One of the options is, you know, taking the fuel tanks down and steaming them. Possibly
already did it.
Oh, you already did that too. Holy cow. You know, maybe I would spend the money at Polaris then. You've done all of the troubleshooting I could recommend doing, so maybe it is time to let them test the fuel and see what we come up with.
That'll work. Should I use the sample from before we cut the tanks open, where it is like black ink, or should I use the sample from the current one that's probably a little less concentrated?
Actually, I would call the lab directly. There should be a number on the forms, and ask them. What would be really interesting is if they would, you know, give you some kind of a deal on testing both. I wonder if they would find any value on testing both. But I would call them and ask them that.
Okay. All right. I didn't have a chance to ask about if we could pull up my profit gauges. Is there a chance we could look through profit gauges today?
Not going to be able to on this call today. We could certainly get you back in tomorrow and do that. It just requires a little bit of work up front for Lisa to pull it, me to go through it. And right now we're kind of flooded with calls. So I need to move on, but we could certainly do that tomorrow. Let's go to Ohio. Herschel, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin.
Hey
First
there.
First off, fair tax now.
Yeah, I guess our guy on the fair tax is Huckabee. I don't know how much of a shot he has at this stuff.
Well, to prove to you, and this isn't why I called, but when you went through that, it made me think of it. My wife was telling me, she does all the book work for the company she works for, that now the IRS requires you to use 20-pound bright white paper to submit 941 tax forms or they won't accept them.
Oh, my. Aren't they doing theirs electronically?
Hope they are now. But back in the day,
okay.
Just recently, but yeah, it has to be 20-pound bright white paper or they won't accept the payment or the form, either one, and just send it back to you.
Unbelievable. You know, that kind of stuff, it very, very few business. Now, I won't say it never happens in business. There are some screwy businesses that do stupid stuff like that, but not very often. And if they're in any kind of a competitive market, sometimes that's enough to just piss people off enough. So most businesses can't get away with being that stupid. But the government, what choice do we have, you know?
Right. The main reason for my call today, previously, I was a two or most of the time, three times a week visitor to my local chiropractor. And it was getting to the point where I either have to do something or I got to get out of the truck.
Yeah.
So we made a decision, my wife and I, to go ahead and buy the Bose Ride.
Okay.
I called and I called them and ordered it. And they give me $500 off in the month of October for Driver Appreciation Week.
Oh, excellent.
And they give me $500 off because I installed it myself, because they allow that now and give you instructions. And if you've ever put a seat in, it's really no different. The only difference is you got to run the electric line back to the battery, and that's no problem. So I got $1,000 off there. I put it in. I went a week and a half in between chiropractic visits and my first week and a half in the seat, and still was in no pain when I got out. This thing is unbelievable. I wanted to call you because there was a guy one or two weeks ago that was questioning about the Bose Ride. I think it was a young guy, about 28 years old or so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, hold that thought, because this I love talking about this, and I'm so glad that you got one. I'm going to put you on hold. We're going to get to a break. We will come right back and talk more about this. Stick around. I'm Kevin Rothenberg. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. I was talking with Herschel in Ohio about the Bose Ride system. Herschel, go ahead.
So anyway, it is so amazing what this thing does. I'm an old-fashioned type of a guy, and you know us old-timers, we like to sit kind of close to the floor. We don't like to be real high. So yeah. I don't even have any air in it. I just turned it on, and this one is the Generation 3, so it has three stages, soft, medium, and hard, for the way the ride feels. And it has a heated
right.
function also. All I do is turn it on. I don't even have any air in it, and even in the hills of West Virginia, I've not bottomed out yet. So
wow.
it is
yeah,
just that's... unbelievable. I was to the point where when I would get out of my truck, I literally would limp the first 100 to 200 yards because I was that tight. Now I get out of the truck and I can just boogie, man. I can just go do whatever I got to do and it don't even hurt.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, you know,
unbelievable.
This is one of those technologies that I talk about that kind of like lately talking about the ketogenic diet and the way you feel it, and it's hard to get somebody else to understand it because I know they've never experienced it in their life. How do you explain
right.
something to somebody that they've never experienced? And the seat is the same thing. This is not just a better air ride seat. This isn't a softer cushion. This is crazy wild technology that is nothing like anything else you've ever felt, and the results really are amazing.
The other thing about it too, I don't know if you've been in any of the other brands nowadays, but so many of them now, they've got this idea with ergonomics, and they got the back of them kind of shaped like a banana.
Right.
So your back has got this curve to it, not this one. It is somewhat straight. It's not got that curve to it. There's a little punch out on the sides of it that catches your shoulder blades that I've never had before. I mean, this thing is unbelievable. It really is. I don't care what it cost. It was either I'm going to get something better or I'm out of the truck. I mean, I was hurting that bad.
Right.
I had to do something. So that's what I wanted to let
this,
you know today.
Well, and I appreciate that. You know, this was the first partnership that we considered that didn't really have a direct money-saving correlation. Now, we could certainly look at long-term health and what those problems could cost you, you know, like
yes.
you going to the chiropractor over and over and over and possibly needing to get out of the truck completely. I mean, those are big financial, but it's not like I can say you buy the Flow Below, you pay $1,500, you'll save $2,000 your first year. You know, we could put numbers to every product we recommended and partnered with, and this was the first product. And Bose approached us almost a year before they released this. We weren't allowed to talk about it. They flew us in. We got to see it. We got to test it. I wasn't allowed to say anything on the air. And I had to think long and hard, you know, is this a product we want to recommend? There's no direct money savings here, and that's unusual for us. And it was about health. So, you know, we thought about this a long time, and then when we saw the benefits, we saw the results, we got to talk to people who had already been using it and testing it. We got to test it and use it, and I said, you know what? This is something we have to talk about. This is something people need to know about. They need to know the option is out there. And, you know, it might not be for everybody right now, but for the people who can afford it, this is an absolute must.
Well, there is a money side of it, though, Kevin. And the money side of it would be, I do intermodal, so I have a spring ride trailer that's really nasty back there, and it bounces all the time.
Yeah.
So I do my regular run, and typically that's all I do because I'm hurting bad enough that I got to go home. Not last week. I did more stuff,
sure.
and I got a bigger settlement coming because of it. So there is a money side, and back where your kidneys are, that was so sore that laying down on the mattress at night when you go to bed would hurt. And that even
yeah.
quit hurting.
Yeah.
And it's just
Excellent. I'm so glad that you made the investment and that it's already paying off for you.
All right, Kevin. Have a good day.
All right. Thanks. Yeah, you know, if you haven't, I mean, if you're one of our new listeners and you haven't seen the Bose Ride system, you've got to go check it out. It's not the same as any other seat. When you turn it on, it does have an air ride function. If you turn it off, it's an air ride seat. But if you turn it on, everything changes. You are no longer riding on air. You are riding on very, very sophisticated electronic actuators. And it is designed to literally cancel the bumps and vibrations in the road, not to try to smooth them out or cushion them. It literally cancels them out. The health benefits really are amazing. Let's go to Maryland this time. Everson, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. My question is about aerodynamics. I have a Freightliner Classic XL. Thinking about getting air tabs. Will that be effective for my truck? And what is the minimum space between the tractor and a reefer for better results? And the last question is about flow below. Is the same thing. Is flow below effective on a classic? You know, considering that you have those step boxes sticking out and I don't have fairings.
Those
are my questions.
Great question. And let's kind of walk through what will happen. And just to answer the question up front, the air tabs and the flow below will absolutely help you. It's a great combination. No matter what the tractor looks like or no matter what the trailer looks like, those two working together really solve a lot of aerodynamic problems. So if we think about a classic, as soon as we start pushing through the air, we're creating dirty air. You've got the bumper, the headlight stems, the fenders, the air cleaners, all of that stuff starts to create dirty air. Well, we can start to clean that air up, and that's exactly what the combination of the air tabs and the flow below is going to do. It's going to take that air that's already become dirty and turbulent, and it's going to bring it back into a better flow. And especially if you've got a reefer behind there, if we can clean up that flow, that's going to make a big difference. So we got it dirty because of the tractor. These two working together are going to bring it back into a better flow. So I would highly recommend those two. They are very inexpensive, and they are really the only two products on the market that are making a significant aerodynamic difference to a tractor. That's why we love those two products so much. And now that we've seen the results of using them together, we are really excited about the possibilities. As far as how close your reefer should be, with the reefer, what does the top of your reefer look like? Is it a nice kind of aerodynamic cover at the top?
It is. It's all round.
That's easier to answer than even a van, because the answer for you with that style of a reefer unit is the closer the better, and there is nothing that would be too close.
Okay.
So you just want to get as close as you can without tearing things up or, you know, overloading the front axle. That's not always the case with a van. Now, there is a game changer, which for a van, see, sometimes you could actually get a van too close to the tractor. So you would be solving one problem, the gap in between, but you would be creating another one, and that would be by catching the top edge of that trailer in the wind stream. So sometimes you had to back the trailer up a little bit to create a more smooth flow from the top of the tractor to the trailer. But now, with the new product from Smart Truck called the Lead Edge, it's a very small, very inexpensive fairing that goes at the top edge of a van trailer that will solve that problem, and then you can go as close as you want. You can find that product on our website in the store, by the way. Less than $450, takes less than an hour to install. If you've got a van trailer, you want one of these. Go to letstruck.com/store. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. All right, a quick heads up, we're heading into segment 4 of the first hour, so at the end I'll say goodnight, goodbye, all that stuff I always say, but don't hang up. We're going to come back and record a second hour. Here we go. Back. We're down to the final segment, so I'm going to get right back to some phone calls. We are, I think I was talking with Everson in Maryland. Everson, does that all make sense?
It does. I appreciate the information. Thank you very much. One more question really quick. Is there
sure.
any product for their cleaners. Is there anything on the market that you can install on the in front of the air cleaners to smooth the air? I don't know, anything like that for classics?
You know, I've seen, and I don't know who makes them. I've seen some little deflector kind of things. They're usually done in chrome. I'm not really sure that they're helping much. You know, the problem
okay.
with aerodynamic devices is sometimes we could look at something and it seems like it should help. But then when we really, testing aerodynamics is outrageously expensive. Forget wind tunnels. That doesn't even happen. The cost of putting a big truck in a wind tunnel makes it almost impossible. So then you're down to fluid dynamics, and that requires crazy powerful computers. So that gets very expensive. So a lot of our aerodynamic devices that are on the market have virtually no testing. Nobody knows if these things really work or not. You know, take, for example, the wing-type deflectors up top. They've been around for decades, and everybody thought they helped. Well, we've done enough testing to know that they can actually hurt fuel economy. But people still buy them. And, you know, so these deflectors that I've seen, I just don't know that they work. They could actually make things worse. So, I you know, unless you found something that you just really kind of loved and it wasn't that expensive, you could always try it. But I don't know of anything that's been proven to help there.
Okay. Thanks, Kevin.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. You know, that was one of our projects. We were trying to develop, you know, aerodynamic devices that improved, especially on classics. And that is a very, very tough business. It's easy to make something and then tell everybody it works. But to really, really make something and prove that it works and test it enough is outrageously expensive. New Jersey, John, welcome to the program.
Thank you for taking my call today, Kevin.
You're welcome. What's on your mind?
Well, I got a question about tires. It's been a while since I've called you specifically about tires. My business has changed a little bit, and I'm in New York City a lot, and I hit a lot of curbs. And I'm wondering, is there a tire that has really good rolling resistance for steers, yet will resist the abrasion for curbing?
Your best bet is going to be, let me think about this. You want to look. Now, here's the other thing. This is a situation. situation where I'm not that worried about giving up some rolling resistance, because it's, first off, it's the steer axle. And second off, we, you know, if you wipe out a tire early, especially a good one, it gets very expensive. So this is a case where I'm willing to give up some rolling resistance in order to get a tire that's going to hold up better, and I'm just going to go look at some numbers. I already know what tire I'm thinking of. I just want to go check the number on it. Wow, why am I not finding it? What, did Michelin do away with this tire? Why am I not finding it? I'm looking for the XZE line of tires, and I'm not seeing it anymore. That's bizarre. Okay, here we go. XZE. Rolling resistance of 119. That's one possibility. Let's see.
That's
the
high.
Other one that, yeah, it is. It's higher than I thought it was going to be. Now, Michelin started to go to what they call their multi-energy line, which is more of a regional-type tire, but I'm not seeing one of those on the steer. So your other possibility, and this is a tire I really like a lot, and it does hold up better to that scrubbing, the XZA2, and then they have the XZA2 Energy.
I had those on the front of the truck before, yep.
That is a great tire.
Super low rolling resistance, too.
88. Yeah.
Yep.
One of my
the
favorite
lowest rolling
tires of all times. Yeah.
Yep.
They do handle scrubbing better. And the downside, and the reason I don't recommend them a lot, is most people don't have a rim that will fit this tire. It's a wider tire than most standard steer tires, and it takes a different rim. But if you've had them before, then you obviously
have
a rim that'll fit these.
Yeah, the problem that I had, and when I first put them on the truck, I actually talked to Chad about these tires specifically, and he told me exactly what was going to happen to them. The two shoulders drop off, and they dropped off really fast. I got only about 120,000 miles, 125,000 miles out of a set. You know, I burnt them right up.
So on your new operation, how long will it take you to put on 120,000 miles?
I'm running 3,300 miles a week. It's going to be quick.
Okay. So, I thought maybe being that regional or local, you'd be doing less miles. So you're working hard then.
No. I'm going to Ohio to New York every day.
Oh, got it. Yeah, you're working hard then. You know what I might try is the straight XZA, and not the XZA2, and not the Energy. There is two versions. The XZA2 itself has a rolling resistance of 103, which isn't bad. And I think that one may hold up better for you. I really can't look around for an XZE. This is going to be just trying to figure out the balance. I mean, the XZE, if you can find it, with the rolling resistance of 120, you're probably going to give up about a tenth of a mile per gallon on the steer axle. You know, it's not that bad, and you may find that you get, you know, 150,000 miles plus out of those.
Well, I know who can find that tire for me.
Who's that?
You're a Michelin Advantage member. You just call them up and say, listen, I'm having a hard time. I have a hard time finding this tire. Can you tell me a dealer who has them?
Yeah. Like,
and
I say,
they will
tell you
who has them.
Yeah. That's what I would look for right now. You know, this is one of those cases where I don't have a clear answer for you. So
okay.
You've got to do some testing on your own. You know,
can I throw an idea out at you too?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. What I have up there now is I have the XZA 3 pluses, but in an H-rated. And I did that because I had a theory that you'll get more use out of it because you're not pushing the tire as hard. But what I'm wondering is there additional protection on the sidewall also? Is there just on the face of the...
It's actually a different internal construction. So when we go to a higher load rating, it's almost like the structure of the tire changes, not the tread or the rubber compound. So
right.
You know, so it's more of the structure, and the sidewall is stronger.
So I'm wondering if that would just be sufficient to just, you know, live it out and see how long they last. Because, you know, I see a lot of rub marks on the side of the, on the sidewalls, and it's actually the one sidewall that it's one particular curb I have to hit every time to get into a particular stock. There's no choice.
Right.
And so that one tire takes a beating. And, you know, I'm almost thinking, you know, maybe it might make sense to hang in with that tire. I don't know.
I would just see how far you can push that tire and just keep an eye on it and watch. Like I say, this is one of those cases you're going to have to do some, you know, experimenting and tracking yourself to see what makes the most sense. The music's playing. That means I've got to get out of here. So many questions, so little time, but we will do it again. Be safe. Be profitable. Be fit and healthy. Always do the hard work and master the journey. I'm Kevin Ruff. Going to start a second hour. Let me check on questions here real quick. It looks like if you want to get through with a question, a comment, a topic, we may be able to get you in if you press 1 on your phone right now. There's a pretty good chance. Oh, it's filling up quick. All right, that looks good. So we're going to get started. Here we go.
Your money, your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry.
This is Trucking Business
and Beyond,
the show that puts the money where it belongs,
back in your pocket.
Welcome to my world. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. The show is all about the business of trucking. We take your calls and answer your questions about trucks, fuel mileage, maintenance, tires, taxes, technology, health and fitness on the road, getting started as an owner-operator, finding freight, working with brokers, building a fleet, hiring drivers, you name it. We'll talk about it here on the air. All you have to do is pick up the phone and give me a call. We're going to get to those calls in just a couple minutes. A couple things real quick. One, the other day I started a show and talked about flu vaccines and my feeling about them, and I explained that I'm just trying to give the other side of the story, a little balance to this issue, because I can promise you there is a tremendous amount of money being spent to convince everybody that everybody should get the flu vaccine. Every year they keep expanding the number of people, and now they're just about saying everybody should get one. And they do that, and they spend a lot of money convincing you of that because it is a very lucrative business. The pharmaceutical companies make a fortune off this. I just want you to think before you do this. I don't want to try to convince you myself. I could spend the next hour talking about all the reasons why you shouldn't get one. But I would rather you go figure that out on your own. I can tell you I did the research, and it's not happening. I would never get a flu vaccine. It's just not going to happen. But I'll just point out the fact that you should at least look at the other side of the story. Now, the reason I bring it up again is because I got nasty emails and nasty comments about how stupid I was and why would you not go get one, because it's better to just get one and not have to worry about getting the flu. Most of the comments were just ignorant. First of all, if you believe that you can just get a flu vaccine and then you're not going to get the flu, you might be in for a rude awakening. You have to understand how many different flu strains there are, and the vaccine is only going to protect you against one or two, maybe three, but that's fairly rare. So you still have no protection against all the other vaccines. There's even some evidence to show that getting the vaccine itself may protect you from the couple of strains they're using, but makes you more susceptible to the other strains. And again, I could go on and on. Just go do a little reading. Don't just blindly listen to everything you hear in the media. Go do a little research. And then after you've done some reading on both sides of the flu vaccine, then make a decision for yourself. I'm just trying to be a voice of reason in what seems to be just a flood of people trying to convince you that you should get one. All right, what else? CMC registration is open. We're talking about CMC 2016. I know that seems like a long way off, but it's really not. We are busy getting ready for it here. We have moved the event. We've been in Kansas City for the last 7 years. We just have grown the event so big that we had to move. We've been sold out the last 3 years, so we made a major upgrade in the event, and we moved it to a full-blown convention center. We are shooting for a goal of 500 people. Now, that is an aggressive goal, but last year we had more than 500 people show interest. We were sold out at 225. That was all the space we had, but we had over 500 people on a list at one point. So I'm pretty confident we can get there. Lots of information. I don't want to spend too much time on it today. If you have any questions, you could always call me and ask me on the air, or you can call our Tribe Care team. They'll answer all your questions. They'll get you signed up. Grab something to write with. I'll tell you how to do that. You can do it on the website. If you don't have any questions and you just want to get registered, you can register yourself on the website, and it costs about $100 to get registered. Now, then you go on the payment plan, and you know we charge you each month, but you've got lots of time, so we make it nice and easy. The website, go to letstruck.com, look under the events tab for CMC registration. You can do that yourself. But if you have any questions, call our Tribe Care team. It's 855-800-FUEL, 855-800-3835. We're going to get to some phone calls. We're going to start off in Utah. Mickey, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Kevin. I live and work in the Pacific Northwest, and I have an 01 Columbia with a 12.7 Detroit. It has a 13-speed 3.42 gears. The truck has 1.5 million, and I'm getting information and planning to do some major work. I would like to change out the gears, possibly the transmission, but I've heard recommendations for 264s, 279s, somebody recommended 285s, running it in direct. But fuel economy is my main purpose. I try to run between 53 and 64, but, you know, depending on the load, you know, I may need to step the speed up. So I wanted to get a feel for what you'd recommend for me and my operation. I typically run lighter to medium weight loads. I don't pull anything over 44 in the box.
Got it. Okay, so there are actually four different gear sets that I know that we can run in direct and then have our two overdrive gears. Now, when you say you might want to replace the transmission, you want to stay with the 13-speed, right? There'd be no reason to change that.
Well, I guess that was kind of a side question. For me, I just wondered, why would a person choose a 13 versus an 18? Is there any solid reasons as to why one would go with one versus the other?
For me, the only time I really look at an 18-speed is really heavy haul kind of stuff. Here's the thing.
Okay.
When I drive a 13-speed, and in an operation like you're talking about right now, where you stay mostly light, you know, as light as you can,
yes,
really the only gear I split is top gear. So, you know, well,
right,
given this situation, if we look at a 13-speed, 11th is direct, 12th is your first overdrive, and 13th is your last overdrive. So we would use three of those gears. So we're not even using the entire 13-speed. We're not splitting every top gear. We're only splitting the last gear and a half, really. Those are the three gears we're going to stay in. The 18-speed, what that does is give us the ability to split the bottom end. I mean, who really wants to do all that shifting? You know, you split all 18 gears, my God, you're just shifting nonstop, and there's no real advantage. Now, if you're really heavy, and even in really heavy operations, I don't know many people that split every gear. You know, most people will get by just fine with the 13-speed and not even use all of those.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say
in
your operation, no question, just stay with the 13. It's less complicated, it's less expensive, it weighs less. So I would stick with your 13. And the four gear sets that would allow us to run in direct are 264, 279, 285, and 293. In your situation where you like to run as slow sometimes as 53 and a 12.7 Detroit, I would be looking at the 285 or the 293. Those are going to bring your RPMs up a little bit at those lower speeds, which is what we want on that engine. But you're not ever gear bound because you still have two more gears. I mean, this is still a truck that's going to run 80 miles an hour if you want it to.
Right.
Gives you the best fuel economy and the most flexibility.
Okay. All right. I was also wondering about, ordering this with four walkers, being, going into winter and being in the Northwest.
Okay. Hold that thought. I'm going to get to a break. We'll come right back. Stick around. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. going to go back to Utah. Mickey, go ahead. I think your question was about whether or not it would be worth it to put in full lockers.
Yes, that's correct. And I had just an additional question along the same line, if you would.
Okay. Now, the way I understand it, and I haven't done a tremendous amount of research on this, but I don't believe there is any way to put another gear set into your current differential and make it a locker. I think you've got to buy completely new axles.
Okay.
They wouldn't necessarily
have
to be new. They could be used, right. But I don't see. We could take your gear set out of the differential and put in a set of 285s. It's just a matter of changing
yes.
the gearing. But to go to full lockers, I believe you have to change the entire housing.
Okay. I can check that when it comes time to placing the order. There may be an upcharge and have to be additional expense, but I'm just wondering if it was worthwhile, you know, running the hills and passes in the Northwest.
There is clearly a traction advantage. You're just not going to think there's enough benefit on the road itself. I mean, the road itself, going up a pass, you know, you're either going to have enough traction to get up or you're going to be chaining up. I mean, those are really the two biggest options. Once in a while, you know, chains might not be required and you might be able to throw in a locking axle and make it up. And if that happened, you'd say, boy, am I glad I had those. But they're pretty expensive. Where I would see them making a bigger difference is if you are in and out of a lot of parking lots or a lot of maybe construction sites where you're really worried about getting stuck maneuvering around someplace like that, and then the lockers can clearly get you out when nothing else will. So they do make a big difference. It's just most operations, it's usually not worth the extra cost.
Okay, I'll have to weigh the expense on that.
Yeah.
I don't do a lot of P&D, but if you could clarify on the transmission, if I stay with the 13-speed, I was told that I've got a single over. What are the different configurations for the 13? I mean, is there just a straight direct or single over, double over?
You just hit all three. There is a 13-speed direct that's fairly rare. There is a 13-speed single overdrive, which is also rare, and it's my favorite transmission, and it sounds like you already have one.
Yes.
If you have a true 13-speed single overdrive, I would not get rid of that thing. I would rebuild it, recondition it, whatever you need to do, but I wouldn't get rid of it. They're pretty hard to find, and I really like those transmissions a lot.
Okay, great. Well, you did, an awesome job at answering my question, and I appreciate everything you do with Let's Truck.
Well, thank you. Wow, 13-speed single. Love that transmission. They're hard to find, so keep a hold of that one. Let's go to Oklahoma City. John, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. Thanks for taking my call. I got a couple of questions. I've got an OPS oil sample for you to look at if you got time. And the other question is about the fleet air filters. Got one in this truck, and it's starting to fall apart. It's all stretched out and, you know, where the Velcro comes together. And it's like one of the old ones. It's got three, got like an inner layer that wraps around no Velcro in it, and then a middle layer that has Velcro, and then an outer layer that has Velcro. And wondering if the filter, do they replace those as they go bad, or is there no warranty or anything on that?
Oh, no, call them up. They're really good. I mean, you can always buy another set of wraps without buying a whole filter. Sometimes they'll throw some wraps in. I've even recommended for a lot of people to have two sets of wraps. That way you've always got a clean one, and you don't necessarily have to take the truck down, clean it, dry it. So I keep two sets of wraps That way, I've always got a clean one. If they get dirty, I throw the other set on, and then I can go clean the other one when I've got time. But just give them a call, explain which filter you've got, and I'll tell you what your options are.
Groovy. And I don't know if you have the oil sample in front of you.
I do, and boy, does this look good. What engine is this?
That's a original 12.7 in a 98 model Century.
Wow. Boy, this thing, you know, 700,000 miles on the engine, 25,000 on the oil, and this oil looks like you just...
This has got 1.7 on the motor.
On the motor?
Yeah.
Wow. Wow. This, I am not exaggerating. This oil looks like you just dumped it out of the jug. It's that clean.
Oh, now quit it. Really?
I am not kidding you. There is...
It had two yellow marks on there saying it was a level one, and I just glanced over it. That's the first one I've ever done and ever seen.
Yeah, so
I'm not for sure if level one is bad or level four is bad.
Four is when we absolutely change the oil. If you ever see a four, they will clearly recommend that you've got to get that oil out of the engine. Zero and one are considered normal. Two and three are considered abnormal, but we don't normally change the oil. We just keep an eye on things. Four is considered critical. Now, let me explain, though, because technically your sample should be a zero, not a one. And the reason I say that is the two things that are flagged, moly and magnesium. Those are both additives that the manufacturer puts in the oil. Moly is a friction modifier. It makes the oil.
I believe that oil's got 2 gallons of Lucas in it.
Well, really? Because your viscosity is really on the low side. Not that that's hurting anything. That's actually good. And Lucas would bring that viscosity way up, and I'm not seeing that.
All right, and it uses about a gallon about every 4,000 or 5,000 miles, so it gets a lot of fresh oil.
And that's part of why it's looking so clean, but it also tells us that this engine is running really well. The two things that are flagged are just additives. I have never, in all the years of me looking at oil samples, I have never even paid attention to those because they never matter. And all they're really telling us is it's very possible in this oil they weren't expecting to see any moly because some oils don't have it, and you've got 10 parts per million. That could have come from anywhere.
You wouldn't recommend doing anything to this engine as far as overhead or anything?
Oh, no. No, don't let anybody touch that thing.
All right. Yeah, I don't know if it's got bad soot or anything because – The charge air cooler just put a brand new one on it. The I guess it's air conditioning condenser that rides right in front of that. It was riding too close. There wasn't enough clearance there, and I guess enough air force from going down the highway. They had got those two pieces intimate, and it rubbed a hole in there about the size of your thumb. And I built a little. I went to Harbor Freight to spend $30 and put a whole array of, you know, gizmos and gadgets and gauges and whatnot and plugged off the whole thing. And I couldn't find any bubbles anywhere, but I kept hearing this noise. I'm thinking, well, hell, this thing's good. Well, it's not that it was good. It's just it had such a big hole that it didn't make enough pressure to make any other bubbles.
Right, right. Yeah,
so
I've seen that.
I kept having this weird noise, but...
Yeah, the good news is that the soot level isn't quite as low as I'd like to see it on a 12.7, but it's nowhere near being a problem. And that soot will probably drop way down now that you've got that charger cooler fixed. So keep doing what you're doing. This sample looks great. Let's, you know what, I think I'm going to take us into a break. We are we're coming up on a break. I'll wrap this up for now, and when we get back, we'll get to more of your calls and questions. If you would like to be reminded when we are doing recording, right with, and I'll tell you how you can get on our text message list. That way, every time we do a podcast or a recording, we'll just send a quick text message to your phone with the number and the time, and we usually send it out about 15 minutes early. So if you've got your phone in your hand, message to anybody, but instead of the phone number, you put in what's called a short code. That code is 99000, 99,000. Then in the body of the text, just put the word listen. That's all you have to do. 30 seconds later or so, you'll get a message. You'll know you're registered. Then we will send you a text message when we do a podcast or a recording, and you can join us. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. We're going to get right back to the phone calls. I'm off to Denver this time. John, welcome to the program.
Hello, Kevin. I had a couple of things. One, you were talking about the distance between the cab and the trailer. I guess it was 12 years ago. So a friend of mine owned a small trucking company in Phoenix. Did some investigation. He told me that what he found out was that if you're within 19 inches from the front of your trailer to the end of your cab extension, that would be like total efficiency. And then it incrementally got worse out to 42 inches, and then after 42 inches, it didn't make any more difference. I don't know. I mean, I trust the guy. I know the guy a long time, but maybe that's old information. And the other thing was,
it's still pretty accurate. You're right. Once we get past the certain distance, it doesn't seem to matter much. And depending on the configuration, we could possibly get close. But, you know, like I was talking about earlier with a van trailer and the new Lead Edge product from Smart Truck, I don't think there's any danger of getting too close anymore. That would solve that problem. Then all you're really looking for is, do you have enough clearance?
Yeah, that's pretty important.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
The other thing I was going to say is the other day you was talking to a fellow, was talking about his wife. She was too shy to get on the phone, but she had a fasting sugar of 200 to 240, which is like ultra high. And he said that she was on a ketogenic diet. And you said that, if you don't put any sugar in, it can't be going that high. And I would tend to agree, but I was wondering, I wanted to ask, you had also said that your body will manufacture the sugar you need. Well, if that part was out of whack, could that not be the reason why your sugar won't come down?
It could be. And you bring up a good point. And one of the things I would really need to do, and it's kind of why I was recommending that she actually find a ketogenic doctor and work with them, or even a nutritional therapy practitioner, which I'm actually in that program now. I'm just not doing any real client consultation, and I don't know if I ever will. But what needs to happen is we've really got to get her to do a food journal for a week, and that was what I recommended. Because the other there are two things that could be happening. She could be eliminating the sugars and the carbohydrates from her diet, or she might not be. She might think she is, and she might be missing something. But even if she is, she could also be taking in too much protein. and your body will convert that extra protein
right.
directly to glucose, or she could have such poor insulin response that any glucose, whether it's coming from a little bit in her diet, some from too much protein, that her body just is not able to get that glucose out of her blood so that it's staying chronically elevated, which would be one of the more stubborn cases, but it can still be fixed.
Aha. Another thing I meant to say, your secretary, when you're talking not on the broadcast, but you're just talking like on the phone, you're clear. Everybody else talking to you is real clear. But when you're talking on the broadcast, the integrity of your microphone is frizzy, fuzzy, doesn't sound right.
Do you mean on the live show coming across on Sirius or XM?
No, right now you're talking to me. But when somebody talks
okay.
to you, like
yeah.
listening to you on the phone, then you're they sound fine, you still sound distorted. And when you stop, when you say, okay, everybody, we're going to, you know, and so on and so forth, that's clear.
Yeah, that is a function of our phone system itself, and as long as that isn't making it to the live or the recorded, which it shouldn't be because we record here locally, not a whole lot we can do to fix that right now, but I appreciate you letting me know. Let's go to Indiana. Mike, welcome to the program.
Yeah, Kevin, this is Mike. You hear me okay?
I can. Go ahead.
Okay, Kevin, I just got a quick question. I got a 2003 Kenworth with an ISX 450. I put a lot of money into this truck and rebuilt it. It's all paid for. My question is this. My customers are wanting me to go to California, and I don't know whether to retrofit because I like to be debt-free or go out and buy a new truck, but I don't know anything about retrofitting. I was wondering your thoughts on that.
Well, we don't have a lot of information yet about it. We do know that the DPF alone will drop your fuel economy by about 3 to 5 tenths. It's pretty severe. Now, what year did you say this engine was?
It's an 03.
So it is totally pre-EGR?
Yes.
Okay, so, yeah, we don't have a lot of research. I wish I had better answers on this because this is something we'd like to know. There are just so few trucks that have been retrofitted with a DPF that we just don't have a lot of information. Now, we've come up with another idea. How often would you be going to California, do you think?
A lot. Basically, through the fall and in the spring, you know, and then from the summers and all would basically be back out this way in the Midwest and stuff. But about 50% of the business, it will be going to California. I've been going. I just ain't got caught, but I'm getting a little nervous about it.
Well, here was our other thought. Our other thought was put the DPF on and put a bypass around it. Now, I don't want anything that could be automatically directed around, you know, with a switch or a diverter valve or anything like that. I would make it so you had to physically go under the truck, pull the exhaust off the DPF and stick it onto the standard muffler, kind of a flex pipe setup. And that would do a couple of things, and we don't know what California would think about that, and trying to get an answer out of them is virtually impossible. Even if they give me an answer, I don't trust them. So you'd kind of be taking somewhat of a chance, but it seems to me like if they physically pulled you over and inspected you in the state of California and you were attached to the DPF, there really shouldn't be anything they could do about that. When you leave the state, you take it off the DPF, you put it on the muffler. That way you're accomplishing a couple things. One, anytime you're not in the state of California, you get your 3 to 5 tenths back on fuel economy, which is big. And two, your DPF is going to last a whole lot longer if you're not running your exhaust through it all the time. It's going to last way longer between cleanings, way longer between replacement, and three, we're not going to be putting all that soot back into the engine, which is hard on the engine, and the back pressure is hard on the engine. So I've said if I had to run California, I would put on a system like this and take my chances, and I would just make sure every time I was in the state, I was connected to that DPF.
Okay, yeah, I'm going to run that through my guy and see if, you know, because like you and me, and we don't have a lot of data on it, so we don't know what it's actually going to do. This motor, is, you know, we just pulled it out, completely rebuilt it. I mean, completely, or completely rebuilt. And it's a great running truck, and I don't want to get in debt. I don't want to buy a brand new one, and but I may have to, so.
Well, not only the debt, though. I mean, it's not just the upfront cost of the truck itself. The other thing is, my guess is on this engine, your maintenance cost or for the whole truck is probably 12 cents a mile or less. The nukes are running more like 20 cents a mile. So that's a
right.
big hit. And that's one that's running properly. If they screw up like many of them do, then your maintenance cost can go through the roof and you get downtime and your insurance cost is going to go up. If I were you, I think you are thinking correctly. Do everything you can to hold on to this truck.
Oh, yeah. I bought this for $10,000, and I put new rear ends, crannies. I just rebuilt the whole thing last year. Just wanted to do it all new, and we did it all, paid for it, good to go. So, appreciate it.
So, I would look into the DPF, and I would look at installing it with a way to divert around it. All right. I've got to get to a break, but we will be right back. Stick around. I'm Kevin Rossberg. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. I'm going to head off to Ohio this time. Al, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin. How are you?
Good. What's on your mind today?
I got a cholesterol question for you. I recently had a physical, and I have my blood test, and I have the numbers here, and I just wanted to go over it with you.
Sure.
Like an oil analysis, but there's a blood analysis.
That's right. So tell me what numbers you've got.
Okay, for total cholesterol is 294, triglycerides of 48, HDL 55, then my LDL is 229. And then I got something called non-HDL cholesterol, and that's at 239.
Okay, so total, even though that's what everybody focuses on, is almost meaningless. What we're really looking for is what's called your triglyceride to HDL ratio. The LDL can be important, but the number doesn't tell us anything. There's a further screening, and depending on whether or not you've got history of heart disease in the family or whether you're worried about it, you may or may not decide to have the further testing that tells us what size the LDL is. So you can have very high LDL numbers, but if they're what they call the big fluffy kind, it doesn't matter. If they're the small dense kind, those are the ones that can create a problem. Now you've got a, it looks to me, I'm going to do the actual calculation here, but just on the surface, it looks to me like you've got a really good HDL to triglyceride ratio of 1.1.
Yeah, I came up with 113.
Yeah, 1.14, right around there somewhere, which is outstanding. I mean, they say 2 is good, 5 is where you're going to see problems, and you are down in the very low number. So, you know, using the ratio, you're excellent. Your total looks high, but again, there's some indication that people who have high total cholesterol but a good ratio actually live longer.
Okay, great. One thing that I wanted to mention, when I talk with my doctor, you know, I go to one of the best hospitals in Illinois. Needless to say, he looked at me like I had 3 eyes when I told him what I was eating, you know, mentioned to him about the ketogenic diet. And immediately he wanted to put me on those statins, and I just wasn't sure.
Oh.
So I agreed to take it, you know, because I didn't want to, you know, I didn't know which way to go. Now, when I looked in the, I was trying to find I went to this website, Bulletproof Physicians, and it's very scattered. Well, hardly any doctor at all. It's just one where I live. And, you know, he's a chiropractic doctor. And I was just wondering, is there a website where I could get, I'm not saying that I don't have a lot of confidence in chiropractors, but I like to get a medical doctor that's, you know, an internist or something like that, who is familiar with the ketogenic diet. I mentioned to my doctor about Perlmutter and the guy in the keto, I think his name is Westland or something like that. And my doctor had no clue who these people were. And then he said, was I on the Atkins diet? I said, no, it's not quite the same. But he just ruled it out completely about the ketogenic diet. So I was just wondering, is there a website where I could, because I like to sit down with a doctor and just to go over, you know, what I'm doing and, you know, just give me a heads up. And I was just wondering if you knew a website.
There is. There's 2 websites that I would recommend to you. One is called lowcarbdoctors.blogspot.com.
One more time. Lowcarbdoctors.
blogspot.com.
Blogspot. Blog like L-O-G spot?
B-L-O-G, blogspot.com.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah.
And the other one I'm trying to find now, I need to bookmark these. There's another one called PaleoPhysiciansNetwork.com.
Okay.
Did you get that one?
Gotcha. PaleoPhysiciansNetwork.
And then one more.
Okay.
Yep. And then one more called PrimalDocs.com. So it's PrimalDocs, PrimalDocs.com. Between those 3 websites, you should find some options. You know, you may end up with a naturopath, which is very, very close to an MD. They go through the same undergraduate studies. They go through the same medical training. They just don't go through some of the final steps about surgery and residency, but they are very, very well educated, and they can prescribe drugs. They are licensed, but natural remedies first. That's the idea behind a naturopath, is that they have a lot of medical training, but they are much more focused on natural remedies, not synthetic drugs.
Okay. I agree. That's a great suggestion. I appreciate the info, and thanks for going over the numbers with me.
You're welcome. And those numbers look good. I'd love to have you go talk to a doctor, though, somebody who understands what you're doing, and let them reinforce that idea. Let's go to Massachusetts. Robert, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. How's it going?
Good. What can I help you with today?
I was wondering if you could explain more on the depreciation and the taxes.
Yes. Do you have a specific question, or you just want me to talk about what depreciation is in general?
Well, yeah, on like, because I bought my truck this year for $25,000, and I was wondering how I split that up towards the taxes.
Got it. So you are right at the limit of what we call the Section 179 deduction, which is a part of depreciation. It's just one of the parts of depreciation. So real quick, with the amount of time I've got left, depreciation is just the way the IRS, it's the method they use to allow us to deduct an item that is supposed to last longer than a year. So most things that we deduct, we do what we call expensing that item. If I go buy a starter for my truck and it's $500, I expense it off of my taxes immediately, meaning I just deduct that amount from my income and I'm done. I don't pay tax on that money because I deducted it from my income. But if something is supposed to last longer than a year, now this isn't an exact science. In fact, it doesn't even work in the real world at all, because that starter is going to last me more than a year. But that's the IRS. What we're really looking at on depreciation are really big ticket items. Buy equipment, a truck, a trailer, an APU, those kind of things. We absolutely depreciate those. We can't expense them. But you know, an engine in frame, we would depreciate. A transmission, some people will depreciate it, some people will try to expense it. We would much rather expense something because we get the deduction immediately. If we have to depreciate it, we get our deduction over time, and that time could be different depending on what we depreciate. A tractor gets depreciated in 3 years, a trailer in 5. Resident or real estate could be 27 and a half years, and it's crazy. So we want our deduction as quick as we can. Now, you would normally take that $25,000, put it into a depreciation schedule. You would get a little bit of a deduction this year, more of a deduction next year, a little bit in the third year, and then a tiny amount in the fourth year. That would be the normal depreciation schedule. But because it's $25,000 or less, you could use the Section 179 deduction to take the entire thing this year. I may or may not recommend that because I don't know what the rest of your tax situation looks like. For example,
right.
if we do your tax return and it looks like you're going to owe a lot of tax, well then, yeah, we could just take it all and lower that tax amount. You just have to realize that if we take it all, then next year you have nothing. But I would still rather take it as quickly as possible, but I'd look at each individual tax return. So that answer was very general. You're going to want to look at your tax return to make that decision. And that's all I could squeeze in under the clock there. The music says it's time for me to get out of here. We'll see you next time. Be safe. Profitable, be fit and healthy, always do the hard work, and master the journey. Yes, all right, everybody, thanks for joining us. We'll see you back here tomorrow.